The Twitter account is called Libs of TikTok. It has become a conservative megaphone, gaining hundreds of thousands of followers and sharing videos that spread across right-wing media. So what is the account all about? What are its political purposes? Who runs it? And why did the Washington Post set out to find out? Oh yes, those are a few of the questions for this week's Reliable Sources podcast. Let's cue the music. I'm Brian Stelter, and this weekly podcast is our chance to go in depth, talking with media leaders and newsmakers about the story behind the story. And this week, Taylor Lorenz is a definite newsmaker. Lorenz was previously with the New York Times. She recently joined the Washington Post, covering internet culture, creators, the TikTokers and the YouTubers who are inventing and reinventing media. Now, I've known Lorenz a long time. I have seen how she has become increasingly controversial due to some of her stories and some of her comments. And I think in some ways this week might have been the most dramatic story for Lorenz yet. Her article titled, "Meet the Woman Behind Libs of TikTok, Secretly Fueling the Right's Outrage Machine," instantly became the most read article on the Washington Post website when it was published on Tuesday. It has been dissected, critiqued, praised, supported, dismantled. There's been so much conversation about it, including a lot of questions about her reporting practices and the ethics of her reporting. So we reached out to Taylor for an interview. She agreed. We're going to be airing the highlights on television on CNN this Sunday. But here we want to present the entire interview with Taylor Lorenz about libs of TikTok and about her internet culture beat. Hey, Taylor, welcome to Reliable Sources.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start at the beginning, way before your libs of TikTok story. How do you approach your beat? What is your beat and how do you approach it?
Yeah, so I'm a tech columnist at the Washington Post, and I cover tech mostly from the user side. So I write about how people interact with technology, how it shapes culture and media, and specifically a lot about influencers and online content creators. That's kind of my bread and butter of my beat.
And you recently moved from the New York Times to the Washington Post. There was a lot of intrigue about why you moved. You tell us why in your own words.
I just wanted a podcast. It's not that deep.
What?
I wanted to do a podcast.
Oh. So did you find the Times was not supportive enough for your beat?
No, I mean, my editor was amazing, and it was great to be there. I just, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's just being a millennial. I'm always kind of like, if somebody offers you a better job for more opportunities, you're going to take it. No hate to the New York Times. But yeah, I just wanted more freedom. I mean, most of my career, Brian, I've been a social media editor. And so I don't just write. I think some people think of me as a writer, but I had a Snapchat show. I edit videos. I make content in all of these different forms. And so I wanted a job that was like a little bit less strictly reporting and more just like reporting, but also doing a lot of multimedia stuff.
And so on the beat, when you approach a story, you know, what made Libs of TikTok a compelling story?
So I started paying attention to Libs of TikTok last summer. Joe Rogan promoted it multiple times on his podcast last August and September. So I started following the account and looking into it. And I noticed that it was just gaining more and more traction. Like more and more high profile people were retweeting it, engaging with it. And then earlier this year, when all of this groomer discourse really took hold, I started really, I was like, I got to find out who's behind this account and like what the deal is with this account, because it was this thing where like the account would post a video and within 24 hours, sometimes it would be on Fox News or it would be written up in the whole right wing media. And it was right. Just this like feeding ground. So that's, yeah, I earnestly started looking into it in March, though, after the Don't Say Gay bill, because it was so aggressively promoting that type of messaging around the LGBTQ community.
Have you ever seen a phenomenon like this before, where there's an account that's just posting original public content that's out there from other sources and just aggregating it and putting a kind of an ugly or ridicule lens on top of it? Is that common in the social media world, or is this pretty unusual?
Well, it is common in the social media influencer world. I mean, look at something like TikTok Room, right? Which is basically exactly what you just described, but for teen drama about TikTokers. The account was actually shut down for harassment and abuse across multi-platforms. So these things crop up. They're usually in the celebrity gossip space. I mean, even something like The Shade Room kind of started out this way by taking public posts, mostly from celebrities or influencers, and aggregating it all. The difference here, of course, is that they're not taking content from influencers or public people. They're taking it from small, random people across the internet, mostly from TikTok.
Mostly from TikTok, right? So I guess this is going to be a really novice question. Like, is it easy to find these videos? Is it easy to find progressive educators talking to the camera on TikTok about what goes on in their classrooms, or is this stuff kind of hard to find?
Well, you know, it kind of depends, like, you know, what your For You page is like. I think TikTok has emerged, especially during the pandemic, as this place for young people to go and talk about gender identity and sexuality, things like that. And also for educators, you know, there's a huge teacher community on TikTok. TikTok is just sort of the default place where people go to express themselves now. The difference is that it's very easy to, like, crawl through that content and find it. Whereas on Instagram, it was always kind of a closed system. It's almost like a video version of Twitter, right? You post something on Twitter, you might just post for your followers, but it can end up blowing up way bigger.
Right, right. And in many of these cases, these folks do not have any sense that's going to happen. They don't expect it. Like, they don't go looking to become viral sensations, quite the opposite.
No, I mean, some of them have like 23 followers. They thought that they were just posting, you know, to their friends. The unfortunate fact of TikTok is that everything is fed into this algorithm. And if you go looking or you tailor your algorithm in a certain way, it is quite easy to get a feed of these videos.
Yeah. So you started looking into this Libs of TikTok account, but specifically the person behind it. Were you always determined to identify the person? Was that like the most important part of the story for you?
It wasn't I would say it was equally important with describing the power that this account has. I think it's rare to see an account gain so much prominence so quickly and be shaping these narratives in such an effective way, especially against trans people. My story was kind of long, but I really wanted to make the case like why this account mattered. And I think it's incredibly important, you know, as someone that covers the influencer industry, to know who is exerting influence in this way. I mean, for all we knew, this could have been a foreign actor, right? Or someone we just didn't know. And so I thought, hey, look, this account has massive power, massive influence. This woman is basically on an entire right-wing media tour. She gave interviews to the New York Post, Tucker, all of that, and registered as a media company, registered a trademark. So yeah, I thought it was quite important and in the public interest to find out who was running it.
Hmm. What were your conversations like with your editors, you know, before going ahead and publishing? Because the amount of backlash since your story has been tremendous. I wonder if you anticipated that. I wonder if you and your editors expected that or were caught off guard by it.
Well, Brian, I am no, you know, newbie to internet drama. So I understand that if you publish anything that kind of pokes the bear in this way, they're going to come full force. And I actually was, you know, I think that's the best case scenario in a lot of ways in the terms of people take your story seriously, right? If everyone just ignores it and it's a nothing burger, that's usually a sign that you didn't do a interesting story or one that really resonated. So, I knew that the whole goal with the right-wing media is to obscure this stuff and attack journalism and to try and discredit any kind of journalist that attempts to hold these powers to account. So I assumed that they would have drama, sort of like what they do, you know?
So there are several arguments against your article. One is that this person's identity was simply not newsworthy, that it doesn't matter who this anonymous conservative woman is, and that you naming her is targeting her, trying to hurt her. What do you say to those folks?
Well, first of all, this woman is targeting LGBTQ folks. I mean, she brags about getting multiple teachers fired. You know, the entire goal of the account is to direct hate to trans and LGBTQ people. You know, she said that she doesn't believe gay people who come out should be allowed to teach children. She attacked the Trevor Project, calling it a groomer organization. So it's you know, I don't know what she's talking about in that sense.
But when you say it exists to attack LGBTQ, yeah. There are a lot of conservative parents, or just a lot of parents in the United States, that are worried about what their kids are learning. So you say it's all about an attack?
Wait, Brian. Well, I mean, I think there's a, you can have concern about what your children are learning in school and not follow an LGBTQ hate account. That's the whole goal is to get trans and LGBTQ people sort of excluded from public life and drive these very harmful narratives around trans people. I mean, that's very, those are two very, 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 very different things, right?
Hmm. Do you feel like you come at this as a reporter, period, or as a columnist?
Sure. I also forgot to answer the first part of your question, which is the fact that this woman is shaping the media ecosystem and shaping legislation and public discourse around legislation. She's also talked about mobilizing her base to run for local school boards and is collecting email lists, which 100% are going to be used for political purposes. So This is a political force. This is an influential media force. The idea that this woman is not newsworthy is quite nonsense. You know what I mean? I cover influencers for a living, and I'm telling you, this woman is more influential than a lot of people that I cover. So it's very important. The right will make those arguments because they don't want scrutiny. But anyway, what were you asking? What was the second
You think
question?
That's a very blunt statement for a Washington Post reporter to make. They just don't want scrutiny. They just don't want people.
Yeah, they don't. They don't. that's the whole game. I mean, I cover a lot of Silicon Valley and tech people and powerful people. And yeah, I mean, I think powerful people do not want scrutiny. They want to be able to discredit the media so that they can operate with impunity. And case in point, this woman deleted thousands of tweets the day that my article came out because she realized that she was going to be under increased scrutiny and that she could get that people were really going to start looking at her account. I think that's a good thing. I think we should scrutinize anyone that has power in this country, anyone that's influencing politics and legislation and public sentiment in the media. Those figures are important to look at, right?
Hey, I appreciate that you're willing to talk about this and you're willing to take on the scrutiny as someone covering this. So here's the next one. The conservative supporters of this account said you were doxing the person. You're doxing them. So can you tell us how you actually define doxing and the difference between doxing and real reporting?
Yeah, of course. Well, the word doxing has been so devalued and it just kind of is a buzzword now in the right-wing media. Doxing means revealing highly, highly personal, non-public information with the goal of harassment or sort of destroying someone's life. We absolutely did not reveal any personal information about this woman at all. Remotely. And, you know, I know that sometimes reporting practices can seem foreign to people that aren't familiar with journalism, but this was very by the book and very benign. You know, we didn't reveal anything personal and certainly, you know, not directing any kind of hate towards her.
Your critics say that your article linked to a real estate database with information about her personal life. And how do you react to that?
That's just false. That's just patently false.
So what
was the link
to? We
absolutely did not link to any personal information.
So what was the link
to? I don't know. I think maybe to an open government database, but absolutely nothing personal. Maybe like an old, I don't know. But I just know that I went through that whole story myself and there was nothing personal. And I know this woman's personal information. It's not even remotely in it. I mean, we said that she does live in California and that she does live in Los Angeles. She's talked about that in interviews prior. She spoke about that with the New York Post herself. She had already revealed that. So yeah, no, we absolutely did not. And the thing is, the right-wing media will lie, right? They kind of just will spin up these narratives. The goal is to sow doubt and to discredit journalism. And that is their agenda. And I think we need to be prepared for that. And recognize those things for what it is. I mean, you know, Brian, so much of what I do is try and educate people about the mechanics of these online outrage cycles and harassment and sort of educate news organizations on how to cover it and how to understand bad faith attacks. And so I think it's really important as, us members of the media who cover media to recognize bad faith attacks when they're levied.
Hmm. Now, the next one was about you going to the woman's house, trying to find her or find her family members. I recognize this as a basic reporting tool. I mean, frankly, I wish the person had given you an interview. I wish you'd actually been able to talk to the woman and interview her and quote her. Clearly, though, she didn't want to be interviewed. So do you have any regrets about going to the home the way that was characterized by her supporters?
No, I mean, I don't. And again, this just goes back to reporting. I think a lot of
People don't get it. A lot of people are surprised by reporting practices and procedures.
They are. And here's the thing, Brian, there's multiple women, there's many women actually with this name. And I really, really wanted to make sure before publishing her information, or not information, but sort of saying, tying this specific woman to this specific account, that I had just given her every opportunity and really crossed my T's and dotted my I's, right? Here's this residential address. Here's where she lives. Here's where she talked about. Let me go there and try and talk to her. I had called her earlier. She hung up the phone as soon as I identified myself as a reporter, but I wanted to take that extra step to ensure that I was just doing all the work I could. And I think this is a good opportunity for people to learn about how journalism works. I mean, I covered the election in 2016. We did tons of door knocking. It, you know, it's fine. And you politely ask, will you, you know, do you want to talk or do you have any thoughts? And in this case, the woman who answered the door declined, and that's fine. And then later, you know, ironically, Glenn Greenwald actually confirmed that that was her house. So, you know,
yeah. What that, was that about? Was Can you unpack that for us for a minute? Because the day before you published your story, the evening before you published your story, there was a lot of social media chatter about it because some of your requests for comment were being shared by the people you were requesting comment from. And by the end of the evening, Glenn Greenwald, who was in touch with the Libs of TikTok account holder, confirmed that you were onto the right person.
Exactly. I mean, it was a heartening moment. I think, like I said, you always want this kind of confirmation and you always want to just make sure everything is correct. I was solid, to be honest, but to have him publicly out that totally unexpectedly was shocking. I had visited, you know, the address listed for her that she is tied to, that, she, you know, is tied to her residential address.
Right.
And, you know, I was like, okay. And then he later tweeted out that that was her address that I had visited. So, That was just more confirmation. I mean, again, I just wanted to make sure that I had the right woman. That's the most important thing.
Without Glenn Greenwald's tweet, would you have been able to publish your story the next morning?
Certainly. I mean, look, okay. I did so much. I reported this for like quite a while. So I did feel confident in my reporting already, but it was nice to have that public validation prior to publishing.
There's a lot more to get into. Let me just squeeze in a quick break here on the podcast. More with Taylor Lorenz in just a moment.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number smart beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support. Your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number smart beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon, and that the waterfront neighborhood where you were growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage.
That's my friend Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent. He's optimistic about the planet, and he's optimistic about our ability to take care of it. Listen to Chasing Life wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back here on the Reliable Sources podcast. I'm speaking with Taylor Lorenz, the Washington Post reporter, who exposed the Libs of TikTok account owner. So, Taylor, you did write in your request for comment, one of the requests for comment, I think, to Governor DeSantis' press secretary. You said, I'm about to expose this person. And there was some criticism of your tone there. Do you regret saying that that was what you were going to do? You were going to expose the person?
I think I said I was going to expose who she was, not expose her, but which I would argue is a crucial semantic difference. But I mean, to be honest, I had tried to reach Christine Pushaw multiple times. I had actually sent multiple emails that day requesting for comment to alternate email addresses, and I couldn't get a hold of her, and no one was responding. And I really wanted to, I really want to incorporate what these people say into the piece. So I wanted her to like get back to me. And so finally I thought, you know, I'm just going to fire off this email. I'm going to tell her that she has an hour and I'm going to see if she gets back. And I wrote it so quickly. Yeah, definitely not going to use that word again next time, because I understand. But she knew. I mean, we went back and forth on email. That was very misrepresentative of her to act like she just, that was the only email that we had. We had a whole exchange. And I included her comment in the piece, by the way, as well.
This definitely gets into the inside baseball. This is what I talked about literally in my NYU journalism class earlier this week. You know, the details of how you requested comment. But here is one of those inside baseball questions. You said, can you get back to me in the next hour? And I think another line of criticism was, well, was the story that much of a rush? Like, was the story that urgent? Tell me about
that. Well, so first of all, I had reached out, like I said, I had reached out to her multiple times through multiple emails. So this was not just one, you know, I had tried to reach her. I called, actually, I actually tweeted at her publicly earlier that day. So, you know, it wasn't a surprise. And yeah, I mean, we were planning to publish because, as you probably know, details of this woman's name were already being leaked online. And so I wanted to make sure that our story was out in time. And, you know, I'm always a little bit more flexible than you might see. I'm sure you know this too, Brian. You ask someone for comment, you give them a deadline. If they get back to you and they say, look, you know, I do want to talk to you, but I need an extra day or something. Of course, we're usually happy to work with them in that way, but that's not what she did. She provided comment right away. When I finally got a hold of her on her personal email, she provided comment right away.
Well, I appreciate that you are crystal clear in your view that, you know, the pushback, the venom toward you is a bad faith actor campaign. You know, you view it as an attempt to delegitimize traditional media and say, hey, you can't scrutinize us, what we're doing. Do you try to stay out of that partisan warfare? Or do you feel like you have to engage with it and reply and respond?
Well, I think with all of this stuff, having been through so many of these cycles and sort of publicly made every mistake in the book, I definitely think not responding in certain ways is really important. You certainly cannot respond publicly. Like, you know, you can't get into a Twitter back and forth. I believe the Washington Post put out a nice, you know, statement, but, you know, you can't, they're always going to do this. It almost doesn't matter if you respond or don't respond. That whole operation and the whole right-wing media, it's a machine. And one thing I've known from going through this and being doxxed multiple times and had all of this stuff happen multiple times is you really start to see, it's almost like a checklist, you know, it's like first this happens, then this happens. Okay, now my family members are doxxed. Okay, now I'm getting swatted. Okay, now, you know, and you just kind of know, you know, the whole shtick. So at this point, I'm pretty prepared for it. And it honestly doesn't faze me very much at all. You know, they're going to say whatever they want. That's their whole agenda, right? Is spinning these outrage cycles up. And I think that's why it's so important for traditional media, which really doesn't understand this stuff, to recognize it and understand the shape of these campaigns so that we can effectively cover them.
Now, Taylor, I don't have to tell you, you are polarizing. You know, you end up trending on Twitter and you get lots of hate on social media. I'm curious how you handle it. I'm curious, like, as a nuts and bolts question, what do you do? What do you deal with the incoming? How do you deal with it?
Yeah, I mean, thankfully, I work at a place now that really takes these issues seriously. And, you know, we have a great security team at the Washington Post. Sometimes they know about things even before I do. And I have a lot of more resources now to kind of deal with it. One really exhausting thing when you're dealing with this stuff is cataloging these attacks. Some of the people that have escalated attacks against me over the years have sort of ramped up. And so it's really important to have this like paper trail. So I usually start archiving stuff immediately, make sure that my family and friends are safe, and, you know, just kind of ride it out. It all passes. I don't know. I just kind of ignore it, because you can't ignore it. You have to pay attention. You have to catalog all of it. But, you know, it's kind of just a weight off my back to not have to worry about, like, my editor understands, our bosses understand. You know, it's easy to get through anything if you have a couple friends that get it. So it's not too bad. Like I said, I have all my checklists already made.
Do you feel like there are stories you hesitate to pursue, or you have second thoughts about because of it? No. Okay. No.
Never, Brian. I mean, I won't even think twice. Like, I don't care. I truly, it doesn't faze me at all. Like, when I saw myself trending again with like 93,000 tweets or something, I just was like, it just made me laugh. I'm like, of course, you know, of course. like I said, you poke the bear, right? This is what's going to come. But I've dedicated, you know, the past decade of my life to helping people understand the internet and helping people understand how online influence works and why it's so important for media companies to understand these things. So, you know, another Tucker Carlson segment or outrage cycle, like that's not going to stop me from doing what I'm doing. My stories are good. My stories are accurate. And I, you know, work really hard to promote them. So It is what it is.
It always comes back to the substance of these stories, even though critics try to deflect and make it about the process, even though they try to nitpick about a link here or something there. Let's talk about the people you interviewed for Libs of TikTok for this profile, because I think that's where to end the conversation. That's the most important part of the conversation. You interviewed folks who had been thrust into viral infamy. And what did you learn from them?
Yeah, I quoted one teacher in the piece, but I actually spoke to many more. I spoke to a couple trans people that had been targeted by the account. I spoke to another person that had lost their job because of the account. And then I spoke to the person obviously quoted in my story that also lost their job due to going viral on the account. So I just saw firsthand the horrible fallout. You know, like I said, I don't mind. I work in the media. I throw myself into the fire every day with this stuff. But these people are marginalized trans and LGBTQ people, often not on a lot of income. They're public school teachers or preschool teachers. And they're suddenly, you know, being cast as a pedophile and being smeared across the entire internet and dealing with doxing and harassment and horrible stuff. So I think it's really important to understand the public fallout of this account and the goals of this account and what it's doing. One trans person I spoke to was just saying, you know, they live in this town. There's basically no other trans people. They don't know everyone. Most people's interaction with trans people is what they see online. And so this account surfaces these niche people that are absolutely not representative of the majority of, certain groups on the internet, and it sort of drives these narratives. And so suddenly this person in this town that you know, is widely misunderstood is even more misunderstood.
Well, yeah, here's the thing, Taylor. Let's take away Libs of TikTok as the example. Anytime you have cherry picking going on, highlighting, you know, one tribe against another tribe, it just feels like the worst of the internet's toxicity. And frankly, I read your story and I wonder, how do we get out of this cycle of just worsening and worsening toxicity?
Yeah, well, I think we need to look to reputable news organizations that are not driven by outrage. I think when you think about the future of media, a lot of it is moving towards these accounts and accounts that are driven for social media, you know, attention, whether it's a YouTube account or an Instagram or a TikTok or Twitter. And I think we need to, you know, take a step back and make sure we know who we're getting our news from. Make sure that things are framed correctly and not just buy into things that, feed into our the point of views that we already have, if that
right.
makes sense.
It totally does. I can't wait to see what you're working on next. It seems like every story you write gets a lot of attention.
Well, I try and do stories that other people aren't doing. So thanks.
That's a great bent to it. Taylor Lorenz, thank you so much.
Thanks.
And that's a wrap on this week's Reliable Sources podcast, which we had taped right before the announcement that CNN Plus is being shut down. So we're going to get into that and the rest of the world's media news in our nightly Reliable Sources newsletter. Sign up for free at reliablesources.com. Thanks for tuning in.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.